Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Hi, Lisa, how are you?
Hello? Hello? Hello, Lisa. Hello, Lisa. Hello, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Dave?
Little trouble with Blog Talk Radio tonight. I had a heck of a time even getting in. It was just unavailable.
Yeah. Well, it probably me and all my electrical problems, technology problems. I'm carrying them with me to Blog Talk Radio.
Well, okay. So how was your week?
Was busy. How was yours?
It was great. I heard your show the other night. It was a really good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And a lot happening this week. I guess Todd Akin's back in the limelight of the press again, huh? Because Claire just isn't ladylike enough.
Oh, you know, just spare me. You know, if we're going to bash Todd, let's find something substantial to bash him over, you know? But guess what? There's nothing. There's nothing to bash him over.
Yeah.
So this is the best they've got. Just hang it up. You know, if you're going to go after him, do something that's going to impress me, because this does not impress me.
Well, you know, how about the argument that it does impress an awful lot of voters out there who aren't as savvy as you and I?
You know who that argument is coming from? That argument is coming from the establishment Republicans who have still got sour grapes and who are trying to sabotage his campaign. They do not want him in the Senate, and they would rather have Claire over Todd. And they are still out there trying to sabotage his campaign.
Well, do you think this will hurt him any with the Republicans?
No.
Okay.
No. Did you hear Jack Danforth this week?
Jack? No.
Oh, my God. He's not the kind of Republican that we want to have in our party. He doesn't represent the Republican brand.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I heard on the news today, not today, this week, I think maybe, what day was the debate?
I don't remember.
Monday? It was the day after the debate. And the way they started the news was Todd Akin still trying to overcome his legitimate rape comment, debated with Claire McCaskill today in wherever the place was. And I'm thinking, you know what, 5 weeks now? 5 weeks now, and every time they mention the man's name, they still have got to say the word legitimate rape.
Well, you know what? Here's what I think. Okay, and it's the money's coming in. So if the money keeps continuing to come in, and Todd can unleash, dare I use the word, legitimate campaign, where he can go toe-to-toe with Claire with dollars.
Are you suggesting that there are campaigns that aren't legitimate?
No. You know, I just keep falling back on the, you know, if this is the best they've got, you know, if they can't come after him on the issues, if they, you know, and the only thing that they can come after him on is a 6-second misspeak several weeks ago, people have got to believe. They've got to start seeing how ridiculous that is.
Well, you know,
And when push comes to shove, he's going to repeal Obamacare. You know?
Yeah.
And he's going to lower taxes when he does it. So when he can go toe-to-toe with Claire with money and advertising, then all of that's going to stop.
Well, it might not all stop, but it all will not matter anymore.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's right. It will certainly go away in a much better way. So,
now see,
oh, go ahead.
Any pessimism that I have springs from the fact that you know, I cannot believe, you know, that everyone in this country either knows someone close to them or at least in their circle,
who's unemployed? I think I just lost you, Dave. So I'm going to assume that I'm still on the air.
Yeah, you're still on the air.
Okay.
Everyone in the country knows that the country's in debt, that the deficits have doubled, and yet Barack Obama's leading in the polls.
I don't believe the polls either. I think I've been reading an awful lot over the last few weeks about how the polls may be skewed and the samplings of Democrats are much larger than the samplings of Republicans, and I just cannot believe, with all that's going on, with people as angry as they are, and what this boils down to, because basically even the disengaged voters or the independents or whatever you want to call them, the swing voters out there, what this boils down to for them is economy. It's the economy. Nobody really cares about the nitpicky issues. Only the political geeks care about the nitpicky issues. It's about the economy, and people are hurting. It's gas prices. It's food prices. It's not being able to get a job. That's what it's going to boil down to with all of those swing voters out there, and the Democrats are not delivering.
Well, but they're promising.
Yeah, well, they've been promising for 4 years, and when, you know, and it's painful now. It's painful for people. It hurts.
Very.
And they're not going to go to the polls and continue to support somebody who's not being able to take the pain away.
So you think the economy is that much more important to the average voter than Egypt and Libya?
Infinitely.
Yeah.
They're not engaged. They don't even know what that's going. What they don't have any idea what that's all about over there.
Well, is that dangerous?
Yep, it is. It's bad. I mean, I want them to be engaged and involved in it, but they're not. You know, they're worried about getting their kid to soccer practice. They're worried about buying milk and gas for their cars. You know, they're worried about finding a job if they don't have one. And that's what they're worried about, and they don't care about any of the other stuff. You know, they don't care that Todd made a legitimate rape statement. They don't care about ladylike stuff. They don't care about Egypt. They don't care about any of that. They want to go back to work and they want money.
Well, I hope you're right. I want to believe you're right. I want to be very optimistic. But I was over optimistic at the primaries. You know, I really thought that people would care. I really thought they would care about Billy Long and that they would care about Bill Randles and that they would care about, you know, all of the grassroots constitutionalist people who were running for office. And I was disappointed. And I'm afraid to be too optimistic now.
Well, yeah, you know, I think we were kind of in different places. You and I have kind of traded places during the primaries. Although I was a little disappointed with the outcome of the primaries, because the grassroots people were much more engaged during a primary season than the average voter, and I was kind of hoping the grassroots would carry that over the top. But then again, you know, you have to be realistic. When you're campaigning, it's all about money. And the people that had the money were the establishment people.
Right.
So, there you have it one more time. It's about money.
So you think now that Todd Akin's got money that it's going to be a race, and since Mitt Romney's got money that it's going to be a race, but if they didn't have money, it wouldn't be a race.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, because you have to be able to reach those middle-of-the-line people, and the way that you reach them is with your 30-second ads during, you know, CSI Miami or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how you reach those folks. So, you know, I think once Todd gets, he's still far behind on contributions, but they are starting to come in now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and as I said to someone today, I mean, when you're talking about things like Obamacare debt and deficits and food stamps, $250,000 beats $1 million pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, when Claire's out there saying, I cut the budget, I cut spending, and telling these lies that even liberal Democrats are seeing through, $250,000 can go a long way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's quite a long dissertation by our good friend Bill Randles today telling us what his new position is in the Spence campaign and urging us to get on board. How did you feel about that?
I didn't read the entire thing. I'm a little nervous about it. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with it, but, you know, it's not much I can do about it now.
Yeah. I'm real disappointed with it. You know, and you know, well, you were too. You and I were both Bill Randles guys all the way down the line, and we spent some time here, a considerable amount of time here with Bill. And I'm really, you know, I mean, I fully expect a guy, you know, like Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich to say, okay, the primary's over. We support this guy here. We hope that our followers will support this guy here, and then just fade into the background or into the senatorial races the way Newt did. You know, but you don't come out and make a visible showing of working hard for someone who is ideologically opposed to you. You know, you come out, you make your statement of support, you fade into the background, and you hope for better in 4 years. I think Bill Randles has ruined himself for any future run.
Well, maybe, maybe not, because Randles got absolutely no support from the establishment Republican Party. They don't like him, and this was his first shot out of the cannon in the political realm. And while the grassroots love him, he was running up against a machine that was not playing ball with him. So, you know, Bev Randles has told me that, you know, they intend to stay in this arena. They, you know, I think they found their niche and they like it here, and I think they want to move forward with this, and they have plans to do things in the future. And if that's true, you know, I think, you know, we haven't, as the grassroots, we haven't cracked the establishment Republican Party yet, you know, and so if he intends to stay with politics and make this his career, he's going to have to play ball with the establishment Republicans. So maybe, I mean, this is my speculation only. I have, you know, no inside information on this whatsoever, but maybe he's trying to find a way to get into that system so that he can work within it. I don't know. I'm only speculating.
Maybe. I think too many grassroots people see that as a sellout, though. I mean, yeah, okay, you know, if you can't work the system from outside, then you work it from the inside. But I mean, when you have to sell your soul to get to the inside, I mean, when you have to take when to get to the inside, you have to take a policy position on the campaign of a guy who agrees with you on zero. I mean,
yeah.
What? Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like to see it. You know, it's kind of like making a deal with the devil, which is what we've all been working against, and the grassroots.
And, you know,
is totally abhorrent to the grassroots. So I don't.
And one of the worst things you can do, I mean, as someone who has political aspirations, is be that closely connected to a losing campaign. And Lisa, this is a losing campaign. We're not going to beat Nixon.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
Not with this guy. And that's entirely disappointing to me, too. I believe we could have beat Nixon with Bill Randles.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's about money again, too. You know, I'm not seeing the, see, I kind of always had this wonky theory that the Republicans really don't want to beat Nixon. I think they're fine with Nixon in there.
Well, yeah.
They'd be working on the same page anyway. The Republicans are not being Republicans in the
right.
House and the Senate very much.
Well, you know, and my friend Tom March brought up a point today while we were discussing this that I've kind of always agreed with, and that is, you know, whether it's the right or the left, it's pretty darn dangerous for somebody to have all three legs of the government.
That's true. That's true. Although I kind of think they do, because I think they're helping.
Yeah.
We're working together anyway.
Yeah.
So what say you there?
Yeah, no, and we've talked about that the whole last legislative session and all summer long and all primary season, and now we're talking about it again, the lack of conservatism in our conservative Republican legislature, sure.
Yeah, exactly, and I think it's going to get worse. I think the new Republican leadership that they've got is going to be even worse. So, what a fiasco. I just shudder to think what the upcoming session will bring.
We'll see. We'll see how quickly it takes them to get prescription drugs passed. And Tim Jones put out a pretty good blog the other day about education. Did you read that? I mean, he basically said charter schools were not the thing to do.
He's right on that. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
What's his alternative? Vouchers? Not going to work because we have Common Core. It's too late.
Common Core, they're starting to. Did I read something wrong, or is national education starting to back down on Common Core?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we've got it, so it's too late. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know how they're going to get out of it. It's already here. But I think it's becoming a dirty word. I think that, you know, the people that have been rumbling about Common Core for so long have started to make some noise, and people are starting to pay attention, but it's already here. So,
well, they'll just, I mean, if it's becoming a dirty word, they'll just change the name, like changing global warming to climate change, or,
sure.
You know, you can always just change the name of something and make it palatable.
Well, No Child Left Behind becomes Race to the Top, and it's
yeah,
just one
exactly.
After another.
Yeah. So, how about what's going on over there in the Middle East where the terrorists are continuing to burn flags and chant death to America, and Barack Obama is giving UN speeches that to this very day blame a YouTube video for all of this. I mean, is this guy so full of crap? It's not even funny, or what?
You know, we cannot get him out of office fast enough. It's just frightening, you know, and the headlines all day today and yesterday were, you know, about how the administration lied about the invasion in Libya, and how they knew that it was, they absolutely knew that it was a planned invasion by the Muslim Brotherhood, and they went on TV for a week or so denying it, and frightening.
Yep. That was on the mainstream headlines today?
Yeah, today.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. I don't know that it'll matter to most of the, yeah. Most of the voters who are going to vote for him anyway. So, what's happening in your world? You've had a busy week. You spent some time with the Newt Man.
Yeah, Monday was a lot of fun. I followed Todd Akin and Newt around all day. They were, in Missouri campaigning, getting support the day before the deadline passed. And they were at a press conference and a luncheon and a private meeting in St. Charles County. And lots of good support coming through. The press conference and the luncheon were well attended, and the private meeting in St. Charles County was well attended by a lot of good conservative supporters of Todd Akin, and I got my picture taken with Newt, so I'll post that up on the Facebook page.
I think you already did.
Did I? Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I put an article up at Examiner.com, and
uh-huh.
And then the next day the deadline passed, and then the tide really turned for Todd Akin. People are starting
yeah.
to come around. Rick Santorum and Jim DeMint and. Money's starting to come in, and even Roy Blunt.
Roy Blunt, yeah.
you know, the guy who was one of the first crack off the bats, you know, against get out of the race, you know,
right.
He's behind Todd, so.
Well, and you knew he would be. I mean, you knew he would be because Roy Blunt needs, I mean, if Todd Akin goes to Washington, or when Todd Akin goes to Washington, Roy Blunt needs to be able to think he can reach out and get him, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the messages are already starting to rumble in grassroots circles that we're not interested in letting Todd Akin work with Roy Blunt. You know, that kind of work is not what the grassroots is looking for.
Right.
And then, you know, Jack Danforth comes out with his statement, you know, about, you know, Todd Akin does not represent the brand of the Republican Party. Well, thank God.
You know?
Hey, we're cheering over here, yes.
Yeah.
He doesn't represent the brand. That's what we want. We don't want somebody to represent the brand of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is in the tank for, you know, establishment stuff, and we're not interested in that.
Well, yeah, I'm still watching the Republican Party devour itself. I mean, I'm looking at blogs every day. I'm looking at discourse that's going on every day. I'm looking at talk back and forth between even down to grassroots committee people on Republican precinct and county committees who are saying who are at odds with each other and thinking that this party needs to fundamentally change.
Well, the party does need to fundamentally change. It's corrupt, and it's you know, it's not working for the people anymore, and it's become anti-constitutional and too it acquiesces too much to concession and you know, that it's destroying the republic.
You've been a Republican all your life?
I don't think so. I was very apolitical. Couldn't have cared less about politics until my children came along, and I started to pay attention.
Uh huh.
You know.
And that's when you kind of decided you were a Republican.
I don't think I really ever decided that I was a Republican, but I, you know, became very conservative because, you know, it was more about my children than it was about anything else.
Right.
And as a mom, you know, you're thinking about their future and what's left for them. I couldn't tell you who I voted for in those early years. I really don't remember. I know that I have voted in every election, but I don't really think I cared much. I was probably one of those, sadly enough, one of those, you know, vote for whoever looks good on the commercials person.
See, where I was going with that is, you know, I hear a lot of people who aren't, you know, I mean, I've got my friends, you know, Terry Varner and Teresa and Mike, the people that you and I know in common, who are hardcore Republicans and who believe in the Republican ideology and who are trying to, and who see their party having drifted far away from that. And are trying to, quote-unquote, get their party back. But then I see this other group out here, you know, who have taken over some of the central committees or made their presence known on some of the central committees, who keep saying they're trying to, quote-unquote, take the party back, who aren't really trying to take the party back. They're trying to totally transform the party into something it's never been. You know, I mean... you know, you can't come to a Republican Central Committee from a Ron Paul campaign and be saying that you're trying to take the party back, because if the party became what Ron Paul was, it wouldn't be the Republican Party anymore.
Yeah, you know, see, I see all of the Paul people as libertarian. I don't really see them as Republicans, and I think Ron Paul, he was a libertarian at one time. Am I incorrect about that?
No, that's right. He has run for president as a libertarian before.
You know, and he wouldn't be the first person to switch parties because he was trying to get elected.
Oh, heavens no, he wouldn't. And you know, Kevin and I were chatting about this just today on the phone, and quite frankly, Ron Paul looked at the political landscape and said, there's some upheaval going on over here. I think I can slip in over here, but good Lord, Lisa, Ron Paul would fit just as easily on a Democratic ticket as he would on a Republican ticket.
Would he? I don't know about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Give me Ron Paul. 50% of Ron Paul's supporters right now are give me my drugs, get all the troops out of Afghanistan, get all the troops out of Iran, close Gitmo. I mean, and right there you go.
Well, and I understand that, but I think that's kind of the – and I know that Ron Paul is very staunch on all of those issues, but I see those as the smaller part of his platform. You know, I mean, he's very constitutional, which is one of the things that I like about him.
Well,
you know, he loses me when he goes to those other areas, but
– Not me. I mean, you know, I know it's – vulgar or profane to say it to someone who's raising children, and I've raised my children, but the federal government's got no business regulating drugs.
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, I can see both sides of it. I don't think that we should legalize marijuana or you know, cocaine, you know, free and wide cocaine use, but you know, on the other hand, I mean, they've gone way too far with it, too. There's just, you know, there's limits to things. I think that the federal government has some responsibility to promote the general welfare. So, and it does kind of help you dictate what kind of a society and what kind of a culture you live in. But, you know, it's gone way off the rails.
Okay, so
you know?
So basically then, that's what I'm saying when I say that the people who are trying to make the biggest, you know, and you and I were talking to some of them just today, the people who are trying to make the biggest anti-Romney, anti-Aiken because of NDAA / on and on and on, the people who say this isn't our party, this isn't what Republicans stand for, this isn't what conservatism is, those people are not trying to recapture the Republican Party back to its roots. The roots of the Republican Party have never been small government. I mean, Abraham Lincoln was anything but small government.
Okay, well, you know more about
do have these people over here, you know, the Terrys and the Mikes and our friends on the far right who are actually trying to get their party back. From the Romneys and the, you know, the Gingriches and the folks who are drifting toward the left, but they're not anything like these other folks over here who are bashing Romney from the other side even because he's not small government enough, because they're more libertarian. And what you've got here is you've got a libertarian faction. I've actually heard people use the term libertarian wing of the Republican Party as though there could be such a thing.
I don't think there is one.
Yeah. But I've heard people identify themselves in that group. And those people aren't trying to bring the party back to its roots. They're trying to take over the party, and quite frankly, they're.
Don't you think that it's been a power?
They're having as much success as the people who are trying to win their party back.
You know, I think that it's been a power struggle since the beginning inception of our Constitution. You've had all of the factions trying to get things to work their way, and I think that you will always. I think that's human nature. I think that you're just going to have that. But
right. But see what in my mind what we had was and you know I don't know how much you've studied the way like the parliamentary system in Britain or Australia or someplace like that works, but you go to the polls and you vote for the Labour guy or the Liberal guy or the Conservative guy or the Communist guy or the Socialist guy or the Green guy, and then those guys go to Parliament. And they go there with an ideology. No one there has an individual ideology. They carry a party ideology to Parliament with them. And then, if there's not enough of the Conservatives or the Labour or the Liberals to form a government in majority, they start getting together and making deals with one another. And when enough of them, you know, when labor gets in bed with liberals, or when labor gets in bed with conservatives, or when socialists get in bed with labor, and they form a large enough block to run the government, then that's what the government's going to be run by. They elect the prime minister, and that's where that comes from. In our country, we've kind of always done the same thing, but we've done it at the people level, at the you and me level. I mean, you know, and you see it. The libertarians, most of the Gary Johnsons are going to vote for Mitt Romney. You know, right down here at street level, people start making factions and coalitions. The libertarians will usually fold into the Republicans. The Greens and the will usually fold into the Democrats, the socialists will fold in with the Democrats, and the Constitution Party will fold in with the Republicans. And so you make these deals kind of at street level between you and me, and me libertarian, and Terry Republican, and we kind of make these deals on our own at the grassroots level. And I don't see this current radical libertarian group as willing to make those kind of deals with the Republican Party the way they've been able to do in the past. I see them wanting the whole party. I see them wanting what I think is happening here is the libertarians are tired for all of my life of being the party that nobody knows anything about. And so they want to be somebody, and if they have to call themselves the Republican Party and take over the Republican Party and throw my friend Terry and Mike out in the cold, and throw Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum out into third party status to make it happen, they'll be glad to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm just watching the way they handled the caucus system, you know, during the last go round, and I mean, it was an out and out takeover, and there is no compromise in their vocabulary at all.
Right.
You know, which I can't blame them for. I mean, they're trying to make a point, you know, and I think what's destroyed the Republican Party is the word compromise. So, you know, not that I blame them for their enthusiasm and their passion. Don't agree with a lot of their platform, but you know.
But
if the Republicans had that much passion, I think we'd be in a lot better shape.
If the Libertarian Party, God bless them, had as much passion about promoting their own party as they have about trying to take over someone else's, they would be a name to be reckoned with.
Well, I think they are trying to promote their own party by taking over someone else's. I think that's a strategy, don't you?
No, I don't think so. I think this time, 4 years from now, if they're successful, then the Eric Ferrises of the world will be glad to call themselves Republicans, because the Republicans will be just exactly what they are now.
Libertarian.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's not rising out of the ashes as a proud libertarian. That's compromising your name, and being allowed to call yourself a Republican because suddenly you're one of the big two. You had to change your name to do it and take over somebody else's sandbox.
Yeah, but, you know, there are a lot of people. I mean, it's a pretty smart strategy, I think, if you ask me, because there are a lot of people out there who, you know, who just don't get it. You know, they're just dyed-in-the-wool Republicans, and, you know, they see and they just follow anything with an R behind their name. So you could be Donald Duck with an R behind your name, and they would follow. And it's a pretty smart strategy. There are a lot of Republicans out there like that.
Yeah.
And if
well,
you want to weasel your way into a party, that's a pretty good way to do it.
Well, I hope they don't succeed. I mean, I disagree wholeheartedly with my great friends on the far right about things like life and marriage and stuff like that. But there's a place at the table for those people, and that place has always been and should always be the Republican Party. You know, and I disagree with my friends on the other side about things like, you know, Obamacare and stuff like that. But those are legitimate issues, and there needs to be a place at the table with people who have those ideas. And that place has always and should always be the Democratic Party, in my mind. And
yeah, that neat and tidy, though. Politics is much messier than that.
Well, okay. Okay. So basically we're seeing a fundamental transformation then in your mind of the Republican Party, and not just a return. I mean, if what you're saying is right, then there's going to be no place in the Republic. There will be a place in the Republican Party 4 years from now for Ron Paul, and not a place for Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum.
Oh, I don't know about that, because, you know, I mean, I think the libertarians are doing what the grassroots are trying to do, and it's just ironic that everybody's trying to do it at the same time. You know, the grassroots are trying to take the party back as well, you know, and there are a lot of people that are grassroots that are in the Republican Party that are trying to reform the Republican Party, because here's the deal, okay?
What are they trying to reform it into?
Well, I think they're trying to take it back to constitutional roots.
No, the Republican Party never had any constitutional roots.
Oh, I don't agree with that.
Pro-life is not. There's nothing constitutional about pro-life.
Yeah, but pro-life is a recent, in the last several decades. That's not. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, Republican Party in the beginning.
Yeah.
So, I think that the grassroots movements is. I think the goal is to take it back to the beginning, you know, and to bring it back to more constitutional principles.
Abraham Lincoln socialized the railroads. That's the beginning. That's the beginning. Is a man who marched into half of the states and said, "We're taking over here." Nationalized the railroads, interned. Americans who disagreed with him, shut down the presses. I mean, there's nothing constitutional about the roots of this party.
Okay. I'm not sure that I can argue with you on it. I'm not. I just don't agree. I mean, I think the grassroots movement is trying to take the Republican Party back to a constitutional foundation. I think that there is a constitutional foundation to go back to.
Okay.
And I think the libertarians are trying to also. Okay, because here's the deal. Here's what I got to say. What I was going to say a couple minutes ago.
Okay.
It's going to be a much. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be much easier to reform the Republican Party to make it be whatever it is you want it to be, whether it ends up being a grassroots version or a libertarian version, and it would be to. Bring a third party into a viable mix in our present sphere of influence. So I think that's the strategy, really, from everybody. We're going in and we're trying to reform the Republican Party to be whatever, instead of, and I think it's much more viable than trying to establish a third party option.
See, I think I disagree with that, Lisa, and only recently do I disagree with it. I think if you and I had this discussion 3 years ago, you and I would be in agreement on that. But and this is where I think Mitt Romney's off with his 47-53 thing. I think both sides have grossly underestimated the number of people. The number of millions of people who have moved toward the middle, who no longer consider themselves Republican no matter what, or Democrat no matter what. I think that group in the middle is really, really swelling rapidly, and now is the time to say, okay, look at the size tent that I have.
Yeah, but that group in the middle is to the right of center. And I think that if...
Well, some are.
Oh, I think most are. And I think that if the Republican Party ever got its act together, all of those people that left would come back to the Republican Party. And I think that's what the deal is. I think that you need to reform the Republican Party to be able to unify that group, because I don't think a third party could be viable under our present situation.
Okay, so I guess that's what I want some definition of. So when you say if we get our party back to its principles, that most of those people will come back, where's life in that platform?
Okay, you know, good question, because I don't know.
You know, where's this Defense of Marriage Act in that platform? I mean, you know, you have to have some definition when you say that we're trying to get our party back, because if you want those people who've moved to the middle to come back, you've got to leave those things behind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know, because I think that's going to be another mess. Because there are, you know, you've got the very, very right-wing life people. You know, and that's all fine and dandy. But then all of those people that are out there hanging out in the middle who have left the party, who have become independent, don't necessarily want to see Roe versus Wade overturned. You know, they may not stand behind late term abortions, but they're also not for overturning Roe versus Wade. There's a large contingent of people out there who, you know, who value life, but they don't want to see anything change. So I think you're right on that issue. That's a mess. I don't know how a Republican Party defines that. And they don't want to admit either. And I think it's going to have to be a concession that they're going to have to make if they want to get those independent people back under the tent.
Well, and see, the problem that exists in party politics in general is that for every God there has to be a Satan, for every good there has to be an evil. So for every left-wing liberal party that believes anybody and everybody can get an abortion anytime they want to, there has to be a right wing saying, no, we can't do that.
You know what would go a long way into solving this problem, and I don't know if you'll ever get people to understand it, is you have to bring common sense back into the political realm, and it has completely left. There's only black and white now. And I think that there's only black and white now because people are afraid. You know, there's no rationale, there's no common sense, and government has invaded our lives so greatly that you know, when people are, I mean, we're all backed into corners pretty much. You know, so we're looking at all of the issues as either black or white. There's no gray area in between. We don't have a judicial system who's got enough common sense to be able to, you know, you can't trust them to come up with good, sound decisions to maintain common sense in the country. So, I mean, I really think that unless you have a very good, healthy interjection of common sense back into the political realm, you're not going to have it. The culture is not going to acquiesce under a tent.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Our good buddy Hillbilly Kevin Harnett has joined us now, and so we'll get, after I say 10 words here, we'll get his take on this. But I agree with you 100%, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. And what we've got to do is we've got to either sell this group something about what you just said, the federal government too far into our lives. We've got to get these life issues and these marriage issues and these you name it issues back to the state level. We got to talk about states' rights. We've got to talk about state repeal amendment. My good buddy Lloyd talked about the other night. We've got to talk about how states are sovereign, and if you do that, it's not the Republican Party anymore. I mean, the Republican Party was born in federal government Trump state. The federal the Republican Party was born in that, and they've stuck with it ever since. It's their story, and they're sticking to it. Kevin, how you doing?
Yes, sir. I'm doing fine. Yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. Good. I'm glad to. Let me know if you guys have any trouble hearing me at all.
No, we don't. We don't. Kevin's
okay. Well,
Kevin's
good.
Kevin's moved his studio, so he's experimenting tonight. But it sounds great.
Good. Just setting up a secondary, and this is all. Here's the one problem that I see in the political spectrum that we have today, and that is we have too many self-proclaimed authorities. And it's too easy to demagogue everybody that many times, you know, a lot of our phrasings, a lot of everything else is meant to shut discussion down and to basically to marginalize our opponents, even on our own team or on our own side. And I just think that I think that's a slippery slope to go down. I was really drawn to conservatism overall because I liked the idea of the entering the arena of ideas, kick things around, so forth. It seemed a little more common sense and reasonable instead of driven off of sheer passion, which the left functions and lives off of. And anymore, I see many of the same exact tactics when I'm trying to talk to those on the right as I see being used on the left. So it's really been kind of disheartening to me, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, things are black and white now. There's no gray area in anything. And I think people react that way because everybody's scared. I think we've got, and I said this a minute ago, I think we've gotten so squeezed and so forced that we're all backed into a corner and we're kind of just really fighting for our own existence anymore. So, you know, everybody's trying to protect their power. All of the elected people are trying to protect their power. So, you know, everybody's a shout down. There's no room for discourse. There's no room for common sense. It's, you know, there's just one answer, and that's the only answer. And I totally agree with that, Kevin.
I'm just looking at things, and honestly, the one thing that I'm finding over and over again is the again, there's too many self-proclaimed, it is my way or the highway, just like you just said. And the whole thing is, on some issues, you can have good, valid arguments on both sides of the coin. And we don't have to demagogue those that have valid issues and concerns and disregard anything that they have that's legitimate. And that's what we're doing.
I think that you can see that if you look at some of the things that have been going on in the Missouri legislature this last session. And I'm going to use education as an example. You know, we've had the right, the Republicans, pushing this leftist agenda of education reform. And then if you read some of the Capitol reports coming from the Democrats, they're poo-pooing it and going back to a more conservative view of education. So, you know, I think it's just it's a tit-for-tat game. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what one person says, the other person's going to say the opposite. If it's you, no, it's mean.
And that's what I was saying about the life thing. I mean, politics is at its worst and at its core centered around oppositional defiance. It is. I mean, if you have one full far side of the pendulum, you've got to have another far side of the pendulum. And I've always seen the grassroots job. And I've always considered myself grassroots, neither left nor right, neither Democrat nor Republican, neither conservative nor liberal, of trying to keep this pendulum from swinging too far left and too far. I mean, we're getting ready to pull this pendulum a little bit too far to the right in our zeal to rescue the country from the left.
Okay, so you're going to have to explain that one. Well, where do you think going too far to the right?
Life, marriage. I'm hearing all this Muslim hate going on. I think in our zeal to rescue the country, and it needs to be rescued, I think we're not ever going to have the common sense to stop this thing somewhere nearer the center where it belongs. That we're going to go for forever. From a period of time when gay people have rights that supersede everyone else's, to a period when they have no rights at all. I mean, I use the gay agenda because I don't want to keep talking about a life all night long, but you know,
You know, my personal opinion on this, Dave, is I don't mind anybody having strong convictions in any particular area. Like me, I do, you know, I am opposed to abortion. I am. And here's the thing. It's we anymore, instead of attacking the idea, what we do, which is the most important, we attack the individuals that espouse the ideas. Those people come and go. The ideas are what is important. And in turn, we demagogue and marginalize. Again, you lose we lose so much of what's important in the argument by focusing on the individual. For instance, right now with President Obama, I mean, do we honestly believe that he is the only one? He is in a position to do a lot of damage, and he's doing a lot of damage. And I understand calling him out on all this stuff, but what is the most dangerous about him is the ideas that he possesses. These things, I mean, when the Soviet Union fell, the ideas that the Soviet Union possessed, we all of a sudden weren't free of any danger. Those ideas still exist. The only problem was they became harder to spot. I mean, they moved into different arenas. You see them move into the environmental segments. You see them. I mean, they molded and modified, and they were just harder to spot the crop that is sprout today. And I think if we focus, well, for instance, Ron Paul. I honestly think that he had a lot of good ideas. I wasn't totally on board with everything, by no means, but too many people just focused on Ron Paul instead of the ideas that Ron Paul was sharing. I mean, it was it was do or die with Ron Paul as the head.
That's because we tend to make our elected into rock stars. And I've had this little rant on my show a few times. We have got to stop idolizing our elected. You know, they work for us. You know, when you hire someone in your company, you hire them for a skill that they can bring to your company. And as long as they are performing for you, everything is fine. But the minute that they stop performing for you, you boot them out the door. We don't have that attitude about our elected. It's a scary thing, and if it's a sociology, I always tell my kids, you know, politics is just a lesson in sociology.
Well,
people,
go.
I don't care what aspect of that you're looking at. People really they want to be led. People want to be led. They want to follow somebody, and they want it's almost to the point where, excuse me. That they want to worship somebody, and we've been worshiping our elected, and that's where we get into the problem.
Well, and we do that in today's society to avoid responsibility. I mean, if we can make everything Barack Obama's fault, then the fault doesn't lie where it really belongs, and that's with us. With, you know, Barack Obama got how many votes in passing Obamacare?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Right.
He had
how many votes in extending the debt ceiling?
Right.
You know, zero. Not, he didn't even have one vote. You know, and so now we've got to start looking at people like Billy Long, who we just sent back, Roy Blunt, who we've sent back. You know, we've got to start looking at these people. And then when we can't blame it on Obama and we have to start looking at those people, then where do we got to start looking? We got to start looking at ourselves. And people don't want to do that. I mean, it's so easy to raise Barack Obama and Ronald Reagan up on a pedestal, because then we don't have to say anything is ever our fault.
Here's the danger in that, too, and that is we're left to try to defend. There's so many times it doesn't matter. Some of these figures, these political figures, they could do anything, and you are going to have a particular percentage of that group that defends them.
Right.
They could do anything, and you're going to have people that try to defend the actions that they've done. And that's where I like the idea of not being locked into a political party. Like I am going to vote R, it doesn't matter what. I'm going to vote D, it doesn't matter what. I'm going to vote Constitutional Party, doesn't matter what. Because whenever you do that, you're not even allowing yourself to hold anybody accountable. You're in somebody's back pocket, and they can push through anybody, and you're going to vote for him. And it's, for instance, I liked the idea of the Constitution Party. I like Cynthia Davis. I do. I like the idea of the Constitutional Party, but once they started, once some of them started sharing with other members of the party, you have to vote for all the constitutional candidates. How are they any different? They've got the same problems as the bigger parties at that point, only they're emulating them, but they're just on a smaller scale.
Well,
and that's where a lot of it lies.
And that's why I've always said that you know, I looked at what Dana was trying to do there up at your end of the country. I look at what this Chambers guy is trying to do now with all these state Tea Party councils and all this stuff. And I have always said, I hate to see this movement of Tea Party become a party. Because as soon as it becomes a party, that's why I clearly make sure everybody understands that when I say I'm a libertarian, there's a little L in front of that. Because as soon as you make a party, you start drawing boundaries and you start sizing the tent, and you start forcing people into paradigms that is just self-destructive.
Well, and I think that's an issue where, you know, once the Tea Party started to gain traction, the Republican Party and they've been effective in co-opting it. So they wanted, you got to organize it, and you got to pull them together so you can get your arms around them and control them. And
well,
I mean, you know as well as I do, we have those people, you know, in our own very midst who are lurking around, you know, trying to sabotage the efforts of the Tea Party movement from within.
And calling themselves Tea Party when they do it.
Absolutely.
I think that's a very valid point. Whenever we're looking at it, though, and anytime what people see is especially an effective, mobile group of people, there is going to be an attempt to capture or to co-opt that group. I mean, it's because they were very active. It's kind of strange, but the blessing of the Tea Party or the grassroots, let's just say, is the fact that they're not centralized.
Right,
and that they're all independent. The obstacles to this group many times is that they're all independent
and they're not
so,
centralized. That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So I'm not sure how one of these efforts is what you got what we're doing right now,
right.
And that is the thing that we have to be able to do is to be able to keep the arena ideas open. And try to encourage debate and try to encourage education. And it's fallen short on so many fronts.
And it has a little bit to do. I mean, Lisa can tell you all the way back to almost a year ago now, last December, when we had this idea of trying to get Missouri Grassroots Coalition together, there were several other groups trying it unsuccessfully, and we thought that in order to make this work, we weren't trying to centralize anything. We weren't trying, you know. All we wanted to do was be a conduit of information for all the different groups. We had these two or three principles that were totally constitutional that your group had to adhere to. Other than that, outside of those three principles, your group could be a fair tax group or a 912 group or a right to life group or a gun group or whatever you wanted to be, property rights group or whatever your issue needed to be. But we could not sell, and we're still having trouble selling today. We're a little bit better. That to join our group, you don't give up any of your autonomy, and that's what people see when we beg people to come and join with us as just a brotherhood and sisterhood of patriots, nothing more and nothing less. People automatically hear that this is someone who wants to take over their little local group.
Right. And again, what are we looking at there? We're looking at what Lisa talked about earlier, and that's a fear of a loss of power.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the loss of control of your local group. And,
right.
And if we look at Missouri, there are so many different needs or concerns in different parts of the state that really, you know, that we ought to leave flexibility for those groups to address those local concerns. Instead of trying to utilize them just to push statewide agenda. I mean,
right.
It's all right if they want to come on board. It's all right if they want to also help promote something. But we shouldn't beat them up if they choose to focus on another area.
And that's that's why I try to make it clear anyway on Monday nights when I talk to somebody like, you know, Bill Randles or anybody, and I make it pretty clear that this is my guy or girl for the job, And I try to make it clear that this is Dave Court talking. This is Missouri Grassroots Coalition doesn't endorse people because Missouri Grassroots Coalition wants to be someone who, I mean, if we endorse someone who was strongly Right to Life, we piss off half our people.
Well, and also what you've got inevitably, I also believe that, man, you know, Dave, I know that this might not fall directly in line with you, but I see man as fallen. I see us all as we are going to screw up. We're gonna make mistakes. We're gonna disappoint other people at a given time, and whenever we put all of that faith into the individual instead of the idea, we're gonna be left reeling at
times.
Yeah.
You and I don't diverge at all there, I don't believe. No.
Okay. I was just, well, good. And it's just, that's the danger once again in what Lisa talked about in putting too much stock. We can like candidates. We could work our butts off for candidates. We could try to help them out in any way that we can, but we got to keep in mind that the most important thing with those candidates is their beliefs and their ideas, not the individual candidate. They may be a vehicle. For instance, myself, I believe that there's two governing philosophies. One of them believes that the people have to be protected from themselves. So what we do, you know, because of perceived bad choices by some, we institute laws and rules, and then when those are broken, we institute more, and when those are broken, we institute more. And you know, let's look at it like teens. All right, in our households, if we lay down laws or rules for our teens, if they don't take out the trash, if they're not in by curfew, what happens a lot of times? We lower the curfew, or else we put added rules on them constantly. And it's also what is done at the government level. Think about it, you guys. Whenever we were young, I myself, now maybe not Lisa, of course, she's much, much younger than us.
Oh, no.
or me, I should say.
Thank you anyway.
You're welcome. What did our parents do? My mother shooed me out of the house. It was a beautiful day. What are you doing inside? Get out and play. You know, I mean, I want you back by dinner or before dark, one or the other.
Yeah.
And do you both believe that we've got just thousands of more laws on the books today that govern the protection of children than we did then? Are the kids today any more safe?
Nope.
Then no. I know the population is greater. I know everything else. But it's just, you know, we're always, every time we look for government to put restrictions, there's going to be people that assign that responsibility to the government, and then you're always in need of further restrictions down the road. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Kevin. Finish.
No, I was going to say, just like the case down in Texas where the mother was arrested with the two kids playing in the cul-de-sac. She spent 18 hours in jail. Too many times, too, on these code violations and other things, what it is a case of disgruntled neighbors who are using the government to inflict pain upon their neighbors or people that they don't like. And the government, really, instead of being in an adversarial role, we should be a servant to the people instead of you know, being the hammer.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think part of the problem too, the reason that we've gotten to the point that we've gotten to is because we used to be a nation of laws. You know, and there were consequences to those laws when you broke them. There are no consequences anymore. It's like you explained it a few minutes ago. Okay, well, if we broke this law, okay, well, instead of having a consequence to that law, we'll just make another law. You know, and if that law gets broken, well, then we'll just bring another law on top of that law.
Kevin and I were just talking about this today. Yeah.
You didn't need, you know, 97 bazillion laws on the books because we could enforce the laws that we already had. You know, you look at it all across the board on every level of government. We do not enforce our laws.
And let's just look at, all right, we have a unified development order here in Jefferson County. In one of the sections, just reading through it, and this was after maybe, well, in excess of a year, I believe, in meetings and so forth, and trying to weed out certain laws that that may have been more restrictive. I'm looking at sections, and I'm seeing in one particular section a rule that deals with greenhouses. And it stated in there that the greenhouse could not be more than 25% of the footprint of the home, and that this was irrelevant of property size. It was irrelevant of anything else. So if you had a 1,000-square-foot home sitting on, you know, 1,000-square-foot of foundation, you couldn't have anything more than a 250-square-foot greenhouse. And this is in the rural county. And then you take that in the very next line, it said that what is grown in the greenhouse must be used for private consumption. It can't be sold, retailed, wholesaled. And it's not like somebody, you've already limited the size of their greenhouse to the extent they are not going to be supplying schnooks with vegetables. And it's that kind of stuff that's no function and role of the government.
Right.
It just isn't. And so we are left in a policing adversarial role every time you turn around. You can't do anything without the government's permission on your own property. And it continues.
It's not just about those kinds of laws. It goes into just how you run your everyday life, how you parent your children, everything. You know, what kind of drugs you can consume and when you can consume them and where you have to get them, and it's everything. I would agree. It's just outrageous.
It is everything. Where do we end up? And that's the whole thing that everybody needs to realize. Nobody thinks you'll go there. New York is a perfect example. This is where it ends, and it hasn't ended. Whenever you get to the point to where you cannot purchase more than a 16-ounce soda, whenever you get to the point to where they're locking up the infant formula at the hospitals and the mother has to go through a 5-minute lecture every time she chooses to give her baby a bottle, her newborn, that kind of stuff is where you end up. And that is what we need to think about. It's a slippery slope. There's no end to that. I mean, where do you stop?
There is no end. Because you vote the bums out of office, and the problem is we have stopped voting the bums out of office.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of funny too, but whenever you look at certain portions of the country, for instance, Detroit, they have been in a recession for so long, I couldn't even tell you how long, decades, at least decade and a half probably, and they keep going more and more and more and more to the left. Because the more pain that is inflicted on the citizenry, the more that they look to government for solutions and for help. And that's what scares me about this whole mentality of another term of Barack Obama is going to bring us a savior of a conservative in the next term. And I disagree with his approach and his philosophy, with what the destruction he is going to reap in a second term. We are going to have so many more on the dependency rolls, so many more that are going to look to government for solutions. Anybody that runs against them to garner enough votes to win is going to have to try to appeal to some of that group, or they'll never get elected.
If
we have another term of Barack Obama, I don't think it'll be an issue because I don't think we'll have elections anymore.
Well, yeah, that's what Kevin just said, I think, yeah.
I can't disagree. I really can't. I mean, whenever you look at his approach, he really doesn't give a squat. You cannot pressure the man. He is going to go through whatever he wants. He disregards laws he don't like. He breathes new laws into existence. He is Hugo Chavez Jr., and he knows that the more pain that he inflicts upon the people, the more they will turn to government for their solutions.
And he knows it. He knows he's got that 47%, and he knows he needs the 53. As soon as he gets the 53 and we've got the 47, it's over.
It's over.
It's over.
Absolutely.
It's over.
So,
because now 53% of the people are beholden to him for their very life.
For their meals, for
yep.
their everything, absolutely.
For housing, for their income, for their beer, for their you name it, for their doctor, for the life of their children.
Absolutely.
Yep, there's all over.
And I think we're all in agreement with that. But I'm really confused by that philosophy that it's going to be. For instance, I'll tell you guys, there was one Republican that I didn't vote for in a presidential election, and I was one of the Ross Perot voters. Now, whenever he dropped out, it almost swayed me not to go that way. But honestly, I was upset with many of the policies of George Sr. I looked at Bill Clinton, and I saw him as a politician. And even though you can say that we helped get President Clinton into office, the bottom line is there is what you had a guy that would go to triangulation. He was a politician. We're not looking at that situation
right
now. Barack Obama is not a politician. He is an ideologue.
That's right.
And whenever we are making a vote to make a statement, it could be terminal. It's a totally different world than it was when Bill Clinton got elected.
And to be fair, he replaced an ideologue. He replaced a conservative who thought he had divine authorship. George Bush was no less an ideologue than Barack Obama, just the other way around. And it would have been just as dangerous to have somebody like that in for another 8 years.
I don't think you can consider George Bush a conservative.
No, I don't think so either. And there's a classic. There's an argument that could be made by Dave that, again, those are the kind of things that we could kick around and not end up calling each other names, because it's got valid points.
But anyway, and then we got to wrap up here, guys. We've got 18 minutes left, so let's both get in. Let's all three get in a last word, and then we'll plug our next week. Go, Kevin. Go, Kevin.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got two invitations out for a guest. Things have been crazy. They honestly have, and I apologize for not having my guests lined out more in advance. One of them, well, I'm going to say both of them I would be excited to have on. I'm sure that Dean Whiteman will join me, look forward always to Thursdays, and please, you know, if you hear me, if you want a challenge, a view that I share on the show, please call in. I here's the thing. I don't get offended when somebody is intellectually honest, when somebody is really looking for solutions and they're not just throwing up objections just to try to trip you up. There is a mentality from some that you'll run into that they will hit you with objection, and you can meet those objections. In reality, they're moving along. They're not looking for solutions. They're laying traps. I mean, they're waiting for you to screw up one time so that they can pound it into the pavement and then try to validate their side of the argument. So there's not a lot to be gained by going back and forth once you realize that's where somebody's at. But please feel free to call in and challenge any of the views I share. I'm certainly not the author, and I'm not the authority. And believe it or not, folks, I've changed my mind before in the past. Often I like to listen to somebody that's got an opposing view because, for one thing, you might see something that you didn't see before in a different light, and the other side of it is it helps to solidify and give you a greater foundation for your core beliefs. So I think honest dialogue is always good.
Kevin Harnett is Hillbilly Logic on Thursday nights at 7:00. So be sure and tune in for that. It's always good show last night, by the way, Kevin.
Well, thanks. I was real happy with the guys that filled in. Matt Gummersall, I will have him on with me. He is the most knowledgeable person I know on firearm laws and firearm safety. He's a tremendous fellow. I have the utmost respect for him. Every time that we've had a major function to where we had a benefit, and we've had a handful of large benefits for mostly veterans, wounded veterans, and he has always delivered on auction items. He's always given. I saw him not long ago, and I told him, once again, I reiterated, I really want to appreciate you for your support and everything. And he goes, well, don't stop. You know, when's the next one? And you just, he's got a heart of gold. But he was on last night in a recorded interview that we had had previously. And if you didn't get a chance to catch that episode, I believe his interview starts at about 20 after, about hour and 20 into it.
Okay.
But,
then on Wednesdays, we have our own Culture Vigilante. That's Lisa Payne Nager. She's here. Tell us about the Culture Vigilante, Lisa.
Well, don't really know exact. I haven't got everything lined up either for my show on Wednesday, but we will be following the St. Charles police issue that's going to be on the ballot in November, and we're going to also take a look at some of the other questions that are on the ballot in November, too, because St. Charles County is a hotbed for too much government overreach, and we've got some stuff on the ballot this year that just is appalling. So we're going to address that, and I would invite anybody else, because I think this is an important issue. We don't really look at our local governments enough. You know, we're so busy focused on the larger issues, the federal government, and sometimes the state governments, that our local governments get away with murder. So if you in your local community have some interesting ballot issues coming up in November, contact me. I would love to hear from you, and we can highlight those things as well, so that people can understand, you know, what they're facing in November. And I forgot exactly what else it was I was going to tell you about Wednesday, but we'll try to get some more information on about some other issues, and we'll roll with whatever happens.
Okay, Monday night on the Hour of Truth, we're going to have an exciting show. We're going to have Carl Bearden, who is very much in favor and has been working a long time to get past the amendment to give St. Louis back control of their police department. And then we're also going to have on Gary Wiggert, who's been working just as diligently and just as long at trying to make that not happen. Both of these guys are very, very knowledgeable about the issue, about the history. Both of them have absolutely valid arguments as to why they are right. Now, I consider this an ultimately important show for most of you listeners, because out here in outstate Missouri, it's easy for us just not to care, just not to really care one way or the other. But you are going to be voting yes or no on something that has a tremendous impact on someone else's life and no impact on yours. So it's imperative that you tune in. Now, just like when I interview someone like Cynthia or Bill Randles or anyone else, when I talk on Monday with Carl and with Gary, I'm going to just moderate. I you know, when I talk to somebody on my show, it's never about me. It's always about you and you learning what this person is about. I never argue with my guests as to, even when I disagree with them on salient points that I consider fairly important. I've got six or seven nights every couple of months where I don't have a guest and you all get to hear what I think for about 90 minutes nonstop. So when I'm interviewing someone like Carl and Gary and Cynthia and Bill and Adam Warren, there's still no doubt in your mind what the hell I think. So I don't spend the time there trying to argue with them and impress you with what I think. This 90 minutes is for you to hear from them and hear some valid points on both sides of this issue so that you can make up your mind. And I'm looking forward to that a lot. A couple of weeks after that, we got Cynthia back on Election Eve. I am absolutely looking forward to that. I'm talking to Ray Cuneo to try to get him in for a show. That'll be excellent. So we will always have good guests to the best of my ability on the Hour of Truth, and we'll never have guests. I love Lisa's show. She does, she does a lot of guests. She packs them in. You get a 15-minute overview. I do something different. I try to spend the better part of 90 minutes with the person and get right down to their very soul. And without arguing with them, I try to get these guests to bear their very insides to you so that you know who they are and why they are and what they are and what makes them what they are, because that's important. I mean, we're looking at a lot of people here who we will or won't send to govern us, who lots of times we don't know enough about. So anyway, Monday, Gary and Carl and Amendment 3, the St. Louis Control. Lisa,
yeah?
We got a thing going about this Secret Santa deal. You know anything about that?
Well, you know, I do know that we're falling short of our goal. December is quickly approaching, and we are just really only trying to raise about $500 this year so that the Missouri Grassroots Executive Board can go out into the night on Christmas Eve and pay off some layaway accounts that we know that some struggling families are not going to be able to pay off in time to provide a Christmas for their kids the next morning. So it's a real sad situation, folks. I know that times are tough for everybody, but we're not really trying to raise that much money. And if more people could just give us just a few dollars, not a lot of money, just pocket change, send us some money, through PayPal, check or money order on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa tab on the front page there, we could provide this nice little charitable project for a few Missouri families. All of the money that that is donated goes straight to the Secret Santa Project. It doesn't go anywhere else. We're a volunteer organization. Nobody gets paid here. There's no general overhead costs that we're paying off first. All of the money goes to the project. And we're just looking for a little support here. So it's a nice charitable thing to do, when we're all working so hard to defeat all the corruption and the chaos in government. Let's stop and think about the people of Missouri who we need to support and help them out at Christmas time.
And listen, folks, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about how this thing that we're in the middle of is really, really hurting people. It's really causing a lot of pain for a lot of people. So listen, if you're one of those people who doesn't know if they can pay off their layaway, don't send any money, for goodness sakes. But if you've got, like Lisa says, if you've got pocket change at the end of the week, if you can afford a dollar a week, if you can afford $3 a month between now and Christmas, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa page, and help us out. There are a lot of people hurting out here. So we fight against that politically, but we need to fight against that socially too. Social issues, brothers and sisters, are issues. That's why there's another side to everything we talk about here. Social issues are issues. And quite frankly, it's an indictment on us as conservatives and as Americans that we find ourselves in a position where a significant number of people think the government even has to be involved, because we are a wealthy nation and we are a caring people. And
it's a good point, Dave. I think that you're making, because if you really want to fight the Obama agenda, Obama hates charity, and he's done everything that he can to minimize charity in America. So this is a great way to show that we can take care of our own communities. So just send a little money.
Yeah,
Lisa. That also goes to show you how important it is that we are active in this, because you hit it on the head, and that is he has made an effort to minimize the charitable groups in this country, because he wants, the only logical conclusion is that he wants more and more people totally dependent on only the government, and he wants to eliminate some of these channels of relief.
Absolutely.
And listen, you know, he can appeal. He can appeal to otherwise good, decent Americans just like that. I mean, this is it. This is charity. This is God's work. This is us feeding the poor and housing the homeless and healing the sick. And people fall for that all the time. And they fall for it without even understanding that that charity is you deciding where your money goes. And not someone else picking it for you.
And I believe that. Go ahead.
And it supports Christmas.
Absolutely, it does. And I think that faith is an action word, and that's part of that. It's easier. I heard this old analogy years ago, and it's very true. You know, it's much easier if you've got an old car that doesn't have power steering. And you've ever tried to turn it while it's sitting in the driveway, it's very difficult. But once it starts rolling, it's easy to steer.
Too many people
try to steer the car in the driveway. You got to get busy, and we you guys are doing it. We're doing it. I'm glad to be a part of that, and I want to try to participate as much as I can, because that's a wonderful thought, and it's a wonderful action.
And that's it, folks. That's it. That's where it's at. It's right there in our hands to do these things. And it's not only our right to pick our own charities. As Americans, as members of the wealthiest nation on earth, and I would wager that 90% of the people that I'm talking to tonight are in the middle class. It's our responsibility, and I'm so tired of hearing about the Christian right and the Christian left, and quite frankly, you know, if we all, as Christians and as Americans and as members of a free society, were doing our job, there'd be no more homeless people, there'd be no more hungry people, there'd be no need for the government to get involved in any of it.
Absolutely.
So that's about a wrap for tonight. Hey, gosh, Kevin and Lisa, the time just flies when we're together.
Well, I enjoyed it. Thanks for queuing me up this evening.
Well, thanks for coming in, Lisa. I always have a great time with you.
And the feeling is mutual, Dave. We could just talk all night about politics, couldn't we?
We certainly could. We certainly could. And sometimes, sometimes we do. Okay, folks, that's it. Please stay tuned to Missouri Grassroots Radio, Monday night Hour of Truth, Wednesday night Culture Vigilante, Thursday night Hillbilly Logic, and every Friday night this exciting roundtable that you've listened to tonight. We encourage participation to any of those shows at 347-677-1835. Get a hold of us anytime at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Find out what's going on. Find the Secret Santa. Find out what's coming up on any of these radio shows. Find a link to any blog of any past radio show. Find some very interesting blogs and find out what's going on at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Join us at Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook group. Follow us on Twitter, Missouri Grass, at Missouri Grass, # Missouri Grass. We couldn't get the whole Missouri Grassroots Coalition thing in a Twitter name. So it's Missouri Grass, so that's all we could get. Follow us on Twitter. You'll stay abreast of what's happening at MGC. You'll stay abreast of what's coming up on the radio, and you'll stay abreast of some interesting Missouri Grassroots Minutes, which we didn't get to tonight. We had a very good one, and we just got so carried away we didn't get to it. But that's it, folks. That's a week here now at Missouri Grassroots Radio. We thank Kevin. We thank Lisa. We thank all of our listeners, and we want you folks to come back next week and join us some more.
God bless America, land.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check out our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.